It's Thursday, March 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, President Obama welcomes world leaders for a nuclear security summit.
But obviously, the prospect of ISIL getting access to any sort of nuclear material is something that must be avoided.
The UN is urging governments to let more people in from Syria. France's president abandons his constitutional plans. And a special auction will feature elusive street artist Banksy. That's all coming up on International Edition. The White House Nuclear Security Summit this week will include delegations from more than 50 nations discussing evolving nuclear threats and ways to minimize and prevent them. As VOA's White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas reports, this year's summit will, for the first time, have a special session on how to ensure that terrorist groups like Islamic State do not get their hands on nuclear materials.
The Brussels terrorist attack signal again how dangerous and far-reaching groups like the Islamic State have become. It's a threat that will be addressed during a special session of the Nuclear Security Summit in Washington.
It'll be focused on the broader threat, but obviously the prospect of ISIL getting access to any sort of nuclear material is something that must be avoided, and that will certainly be part of the conversation.
Since the attacks, Belgium has put armed guards at its nuclear facilities. But leaders are more worried about terrorists in countries like Pakistan getting their hands on nuclear materials and about North Korea's nuclear threats. The Nuclear Security Summit will be President Obama's fourth and final one. At previous sessions, nations have discussed how to lower the use of highly enriched uranium, secure vulnerable nuclear materials, and avert nuclear smuggling and terrorism.
These summits hopefully have really created a international regime that reinforces norms and practices among countries about safety, security, and operation.
But experts say key issues remain unresolved.
But the overall objective of securing all the most vulnerable nuclear materials in 4 years, I think we can safely say a lot of progress has happened, but that goal I don't think has been achieved.
Much of the material remains in military stockpiles, say analysts, making it an especially thorny issue. Russia has declined to attend, saying these summits have played out their role.
That the Russian and Chinese governments have not bought into the Prague agenda and in fact are thinking about modernizing and expanding their nuclear arsenals at a pace quite different from anybody in the West.
With a new U.S. president due to take office in January, one open question is what's next?
Well, I certainly hope that the incoming president would understand that safeguarding loose nuclear materials around the globe is a top national security priority of the United States.
The White House says one goal of this summit will be to strengthen an international network of organizations to keep working on nuclear security around the globe. Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News, the White House.
Turning now to what the web is saying about the nuclear summit here in Washington, we're joined by our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee. Hello, G.
Hi, Dave.
Are people talking about the nuclear summit here in Washington yet?
Yes, surprisingly, because it's only eve of the summit, people are already using the hashtag nuclear summit. Here's one from the U.S. Secret Service with the handle @secretservice. The hashtag nuclear summit has begun and traffic restrictions are in place. Please report problems and concerns specific to this event to #nuclearsummit. And that shows a real reason why this hashtag is trending Wednesday night. Commuting in and around the DMV area just got harder. One Twitter user wrote, "Not for nothing, but the hashtag nuclear summit in DC is causing 25 megaton traffic jam." Other tweets are sharing links to the Secret Service's press releases about the road blockage.
What about non-domestic issues, stuff that's not happening here in the United States?
There's a tweet from Amnesty International about Turkey. The account tweeted, "U.S. President Barack Obama must urge an end to abuse against Kurds in Turkey during Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's visit, and he's in Washington for the nuclear summit."
Also, I understand there's some traffic related to the hijack incident on the Egypt airliner.
Definitely. Now, where do I begin? A hijacker took dozens of hostages aboard an Egypt Air plane over wanting to get in touch with his ex-wife. Now, the good thing is all of the passengers and crew have been freed, but while they were held captive, a British passenger asked for a photograph with their captor, Saif Eldin Mustafa. Dave, were you able to see the photo?
No. The guy's supposedly wearing an explosive belt. I don't know if I got... Excuse me, can I get a photo? No, I don't think so.
He did get a photo, and, you know, the whole debate online is about whether it's a selfie or not, because it clearly seems like he's not holding onto the camera or the phone. And the really sad part is, even the explosive belt he had on turned out to be fake. Dave, back to you.
That's social media reporter G. Abby Lee. She tweets for our program's account. That's at VOA underscore IE. You can follow her at JEEABBEYLEE. Coming up, the United Nations calls on Europe to do more for Syrian refugees. President Obama commutes some prison sentences, and Brazil's president fights off her critics. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called on governments worldwide to let in more Syrian refugees and not give in to what he called fear-mongering about refugees. Speaking at a special one-day conference on Syria in Geneva Wednesday, Mr. Ban said that Syrians are struggling to survive 6 years after their civil war began.
6 years into conflict, Syrians are losing hope of supporting their families or educating their children. Many people value that hope more than their own lives, as we have seen on the shores of Turkey and southern Europe. Communities hosting refugees in neighboring countries are exhausted. Health, education, sanitation, and public utilities are overstretched and under-resourced.
The UN Refugee Agency wants to find places for about one-tenth of the nearly 5 million Syrian refugees crowded into countries across Europe. So far, 179,000 places have been pledged, but the UN Secretary General said more room needs to be made.
Today, I ask that countries act with solidarity in the name of our shared humanity by pledging new and additional pathways for the admission of Syrian refugees. These pathways can include resettlement or humanitarian admission, family reunions, as well as labor or study opportunities. States have pledged more than 178,000 places so far. I call on you to expand on these commitments, and I urge other countries to join.
Mr. Ban said that accepting refugees is a win for everyone because they are devoted to education, improvement, and self-reliance. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, told the conference that many countries have not kept promises of support that they made at the Supporting Syria and the Region conference in London in February.
The magnitude of this particular crisis shows us unmistakably that it cannot be business as usual, leaving the greatest burden to be carried by the countries closest to the conflict.
Grandi said that pledges of support need to be distributed as soon as possible and need to be complemented by other measures to resettle Syrian refugees. Meanwhile, the European Commissioner for Migration, Home Affairs and Citizenship, Dimitris Avramopoulos, said that more countries need to take part in resettling the more than 50 million refugees worldwide.
More than 50 million people are refugees right now all around the world. So the whole world, in a concerted, coordinated, and united way, must address this issue. And all countries all around the world should be part of the solution.
Avramopoulos said that European commitments to resettle 18,000 Syrian refugees are not enough.
European member states still have a commitment to resettle the remaining 18,000 from the EU scheme. But this is not enough, and I have consistently been urging member states to resettle more. That is why we have proposed to member states to use the 54,000 places not yet attributed under the intra-EU relocation scheme to legally and directly admit Syrian refugees from Turkey.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said the best hope for Syrians, that is, remains ending the conflict. He said he hopes the current cessation of hostilities will lead to a ceasefire and ultimately to a political solution through dialogue. Nearly 5 million Syrians are refugees, and another 6.6 million are internally displaced within their own country. French President François Hollande abandoned plans Wednesday to push through deeply controversial constitutional changes that included stripping French citizenship from convicted terrorists and enshrining the state of emergency into the nation's charter.
Je constate aujourd'hui, quatre mois après,
he said today, 4 months later, I can see that the National Assembly and the Senate have not been able to agree on a common draft, and a compromise seems out of reach on the definition of stripping terrorists of their nationality. While the constitutional amendments passed the socialist-controlled National Assembly or lower house earlier this year, the conservative-controlled Senate offered up a different version of the legislation, making its passage difficult, if not impossible. On Wednesday, President Hollande said he had had enough. He said, I have also decided, after meeting the presidents of the National Assembly and the Senate, to close the constitutional debate. Both France and Belgium are grappling with how to respond to the terrorist threat, but Hollande's push for constitutional changes and France's current state of emergency, now in its fifth month since the November 13th attacks, have been particularly divisive. Even without being enshrined in the Constitution, France's current state of emergency, announced following the attacks that killed 130 people, is still extremely controversial. Thousands of soldiers have been deployed across the country to guard sensitive sites, and police have been granted sweeping powers to search premises and place suspects under house arrest without court warrants. While many ordinary French supported the extrajudicial measures after November's attacks, rights groups and activists denounced them as unfair and biased against France's 5-million-strong Muslim community. Here in the United States, U.S. President Barack Obama says the goal of terrorism is to weaken our faith and to lead people to strike out against those who look or pray differently. Obama used remarks at an Easter prayer breakfast to urge people to stand against extremist groups like those that recently attacked in Belgium and in Pakistan. He noted that most of the victims were Christian and Muslim women and children.
And so our prayers are with the victims, their families, the survivors of these cowardly attacks. And as Joe mentioned, these attacks can foment fear and division. They can tempt us to cast out the stranger, strike out against those who don't look like us, or pray exactly as we do. and they can lead us to turn our backs on those who are most in need of help and refuge. That's the intent of the terrorists, is to weaken our faith, to weaken our best impulses, our better angels.
Mr. Obama said that this Easter holiday took on a greater meaning as a result of horrific acts of terror. The president thanked those in attendance for their work and said he has been changed by his faith.
You have been on the front lines of delivering God's message of love and compassion and mercy for his children. And I have to say that over the last 7 years, I could not have been prouder to work with you. We have built partnerships that have transcended partisan affiliation, that have transcended individual congregations and even faiths, to form a community that's bound by our shared ideals and rooted in our common humanity.
Mr. Obama says that his time in office has taught him there is always the possibility of redemption. Later Wednesday, the president commuted the prison sentences of 61 people serving time mostly for drug-related crimes. The White House said that more than one-third of the inmates were serving life sentences. All of them were jailed for drug possession, intent to distribute, or related crimes. A few also had firearms violations. In a letter to those receiving clemency, Mr. Obama said the power to grant pardons and commutations embodies the basic belief in our democracy that people deserve a second chance after having made a mistake in their lives that led to a conviction under our laws. The White House says Mr. Obama also cautioned those receiving clemency that what they do with this unexpected opportunity reflects not only on each individual person, but also on all those still behind bars who are seeking that same shot at a new life. Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff has lashed out at critics trying to impeach her on Wednesday, saying they were trying to carry out a coup to oust her.
Impeachment sem crime de responsabilidade.
She said impeachment without responsibility for a crime and without responsibility for a crime, that's a coup. That is the question. There is no use in pretending that we are discussing a theoretical impeachment. We are discussing a very concrete impeachment without responsibility for the crimes. Rousseff said in Brasilia that she would continue to advance social programs in the face of an ongoing recession, rebuffing opposition lawmakers who claim that she illegally borrowed money to boost public spending to mask the severity of the country's economic downturn from voters during her 2014 re-election campaign.
Nós queremos que a economia brasileira...
She said, we want the Brazilian economy to get back on track. Without political stability, we will not get there. Those who want to interrupt a legitimately elected mandate without using legal instruments will be responsible for the delay of the return of economic growth and job creation. Rousseff has had a tenuous hold on power, which was made more difficult Tuesday when her main coalition partner, the Brazilian Democratic Movement Party, the country's largest political group, left her government. The split with Rousseff's leftist Workers' Party greatly reduces her chances of mustering the one-third of the votes she needs in Brazil's lower house of Congress to defeat a first impeachment vote, which could be held by the middle of next month. With the political crisis at home, President Rousseff canceled a planned trip to Washington for the Nuclear Safety Summit. Her critics have taken to the streets to protest Brazil's worst recession in decades and a corruption scandal at the state-owned Petrobras, oil company, that has reached Rousseff's inner circle of associates. One opposition leader, Senator Romero Juca of the Democratic Movement Party, said that we're going to try to change the country. The economic and social crisis is very serious. Brazil was not long ago heralded as an emerging world economic power alongside China, Russia, and India. But the South American country's economy contracted nearly 4% last year and is on track for its worst two-year economic skid in more than a century. At the same time, South America's largest country is fighting the outbreak of the mosquito-borne Zika virus as it prepares to host the Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro in August. Coming up, some groundbreaking transplants for people with HIV, and you could own a piece of Banksy street art. This is VOA.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
Here's a quick quiz. What do the letters LTATONLAW stand for? We know the answer, right? Listen to Akwe Thompson on Nightline Africa weekends. Add to that 16 and 18 UTC on VOA, and we have a perfect score. That was easy.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Surgeons at Johns Hopkins Medicine in Maryland have successfully completed the first U.S. liver and kidney transplants from an HIV-positive donor to an HIV-positive recipient. Dr. Dori Segev is a transplant specialist and professor of surgery at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine.
So this is a very exciting day for us to be able to transplant patients with HIV, but it's really only the beginning. We're in the process of teaching transplant centers across the country the protocols that we've put together, sharing with them our experience and our safety measures and things that we've put into place so that patients can have the opportunity for these HIV to HIV transplants across the United States.
Dr. Christine Durand is an associate professor of medicine and oncology at Johns Hopkins University.
The patient was the first to enroll for the study, and finally, after years of waiting, the call came just a few weeks ago. The surgery went without complication, and the kidney began working immediately. The patient is already home and doing well.
Dr. Durand says that the liver transplant patient is still in the hospital but is doing well and is expected to be discharged within the next few days. This was the first ever case of an HIV-positive liver transplant and the first time in the United States, that an HIV-positive kidney has been transplanted. South African doctors have done HIV-positive kidney transplants before. Dr. Christine Durand says that further testing will be done on both patients, including exposing them to a second strain of HIV from their deceased organ donor.
What that means is that we need to consider carefully whether the donors have resistant virus. So all of the recipients are going to be on HIV medications already. And so when we consider these donors carefully and select them, we have to take into account matching regimens and matching HIV resistance patterns. So this is something we're going to monitor for carefully over the ensuing months.
According to researchers at the University of Pennsylvania, there are nearly 400 HIV-positive people in the United States who could donate organs each year, saving a potential 1,000 other lives. There are around 122,000 people in the U.S. awaiting organ donations. Well, you might not know who the elusive British artist Banksy is, but you've probably seen his work. And if you wanted to own some, a collection of works by Banksy, including screen prints and other methods, goes up for auction in Southern California next month. The top piece at Julian's Street and Contemporary Art Auction on April 30th is expected to be Banksy's 2002 work, Happy Choppers. That's an original spray paint stencil of a military Apache helicopter, done out in pink bows. It was created in central London and is expected to fetch around $150,000. Michael Doyle is the consignment director at Julian's in West Hollywood.
So typically for auctions, we put a pre-sale conservative auction estimate. So Happy Choppers is estimated at $100,000 to $150,000. So that's a general pre-sale range. Typically, our works sell for over the high estimate. So Morons right behind me, we just sold. That was estimated for $20,000 to $25,000. Not the same print, but another version of this. And that ended up selling for closer to $35,000. So we've typically achieved over estimated results with all our Banksy pieces.
Other Banksy works include the prints Nola, a 2009 Hurricane Katrina image of a girl holding an umbrella with the rain falling inside of it. There's also Bomb Love and Crazy Horse, which Banksy created during a stay in New York. Michael Doyle says that many of the items were made just before the British graffiti artist became an international superstar.
But also, a lot of these prints were made at a time in, like, 2006, when he wasn't a big deal and people would buy them for cheap and, you know, throw them wherever, not take care of them. And so, you know, all the stuff that he made originally is still not all around. So it is, for example, the Bomb Love, this is a mint condition Bomb Love. This is signed by Banksy himself, and so there's not very many, pieces like this. This was made in 2004. That's still in mint condition before Banksy became the huge phenomenon he is today.
In addition to works by Banksy, the auction will feature a collection of more than 30 works by the iconic street artist Shepard Fairey, including an HPM silkscreen and mixed media collage entitled Obey. Other highlights include a complete set of Damien Hirst spin paintings and works by Andy Warhol, Jeff Koons, and from the Los Angeles Street Art Gallery. If you would like to register to bid on any of Banksy's or other artists' works, you can log on to the julianslive.com website beginning April 30th at 21 hours UTC. Thank you for joining us for VOA's International Edition. Tracy Carter directed our program. Zubair El-Tayeb was our engineer. We welcome your questions or comments. You can find us on Facebook at VOA Now. Our Twitter handle is at @VOA_IE, and you can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. Find out more about the stories you heard on our show by visiting our website, voanews.com. Until next time, I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
More than 70 people were killed and more than 300 injured in a suicide bombing in a crowded park in Lahore, Pakistan, on Easter Sunday. Most of those killed were women and children. State Department spokesperson John Kirby condemned in the strongest terms the appalling terrorist attack in the eastern province of Punjab. Jamaat-ul-Ahrar, a splinter group of the Pakistani Taliban, has claimed responsibility for the attack, which they say was directed at Pakistani Christians, though in the aftermath it has become clear more Muslims than Christians lost their lives in the attack. Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif vowed to eradicate extremist ideologies from Pakistan after the Easter Sunday bombing. Our goal is not only to eliminate terror infrastructure, but also the extremist mindset, which is a threat to our way of life, Sharif said in a statement. We must take this war to the doors of the terrorist outfits before they are able to hit our innocent countrymen. Jamaat-ul-Ahrar has claimed responsibility for several big attacks in the past 2 years. It has previously carried out at least two major attacks in Lahore, one in 2015 that targeted two Christian churches and another at the Wagah border between India and Pakistan in late 2014. Of Pakistan's 190 million people, approximately 1.5% of the total population is Christian, according to the latest census. But it is a community that has been targeted by extremist groups before. For example, in 2013, a suicide bombing at a church in Peshawar left more than 100 people dead, and a series of attacks at churches in Lahore left 14 dead. Attacks like these only deepen our shared resolve to defeat terrorism around the world, said spokesperson Kirby. And we will continue to work with our partners in Pakistan and across the region to combat the threat of terrorism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
It's for what's your name?